Welcome to episode 17 of Pandemic Preparedness. I'm your host, Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, editor of naturalnews.com. Thank you for joining me. Can't believe it's already been 17 episodes here, and yet every single day there's some shocking new revelation about Ebola that just blows my mind, and today was no exception, which is why I had to record this additional episode that will cause your jaw to drop to the floor. The World Health Organization has just issued an Ebola situation assessment. This was issued on October 14th, 2014. Now, that's the day I'm recording this, and I'm going to read to you some of the astonishing quotes, the admissions by the WHO that show that the actual incubation time of Ebola may be not the 21 days that we've been told, but double that, 42 days. Yes, it can incubate in a victim for 6 weeks. So this is huge, disturbing news. And the reason I'm recording this and saving the World Health Organization page tonight is because I think that they might remove this. So they might take it down. It's just too shocking. But let me read for you a couple of things that are in this report. First of all, this report is talking about, it's got some good news and some bad news. The good news is that it looks like Nigeria does not have the Ebola virus spreading anymore. But then it goes on to say that in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, that, quote, WHO epidemiologists see no signs that the outbreaks in any of these three countries are coming under control, end quote. And it even talks about the unusual characteristic of the epidemic being persistent in a cyclical pattern of gradual dips followed by sudden flare-ups, which is baffling epidemiologists. Now, but let me get to the part that is really shocking about all of this, the incubation period. Now, the WHO document is a little vague, a little bit wishy-washy on some of the verbiage here. So this interpretation is not 100% certain, but let me read you their words and then attempt to interpret it as accurately as I can, and you can decide whether this is true or not. Here's what it says. Quote, recent studies conducted in West Africa have demonstrated that 95% of confirmed cases have an incubation period in the range of 1 to 21 days. Got it? 95%, that's 19 out of 20, has an incubation period within 1 to 21 days. So that right there, that automatically means that, well, 5% or 1 out of 20 must have an incubation period that is beyond 21 days. Right? That's the deductive reasoning here. So WHO goes on to state the following sentence, which is slightly confusing, but here it is. They say, quote, 98% of confirmed cases have an incubation period that falls within the 1 to 42 day interval. Got that? 98% happens within 42 days. 95% happens within 21 days. Obviously, 98 minus 95 is 3%. That means 3% of the cases fall between 21 and 42 days, right? This is the only logical way to interpret this so far. Now, what about the other 2%? I don't know. WHO doesn't explain the other 2%. It's sort of the mystery 2%, but if the 2% doesn't fall within 1 to 42 days, the only deductive logic conclusion here is that 2% of the infections, or 1 out of 50, somehow have incubation periods beyond 42 days, which is pretty disturbing. But we're not even going to go there. We're just going to stick with the 5% that is clearly explained in this sentence by deductive reasoning, right? 1 out of 20 Ebola patients incubates Ebola for a day range between 21 and 42 days. In other words, they don't become symptomatic until 3 to 6 weeks after they're infected. Now, why is this such a shocking, jaw-dropping statement? Because we've all been told all along, and in fact, I've repeated this too, that the maximum incubation period of Ebola was 21 days. This is what we've all been told. This is what the CDC has been repeating, 21 days. Everybody that's been in a lockdown situation, What's the duration of the lockdown? 21 days. Everybody that's been told to self-report symptoms or go under self-isolation, what's the duration? 21 days. You hear it over and over and over again from everyone. 21 days is what we were told. And until today, I thought 21 days was the maximum. Just goes to show you that even when I'm researching this every single day, I can still be shocked by some new revelation that apparently no one else had reported. I'm not aware of any other report that talked about incubation being from 3 to 6 weeks in 1 out of 20 Ebola patients. Have you seen that anywhere? I haven't seen it anywhere until I saw it in this World Health Organization document. And then, of course, I wrote a story about that and published that on naturalnews.com, which, to my knowledge, is the first story to cover this just absolutely shocking revelation. Now, if you're wondering, is this really what the WHO is saying? Is this real? Let me read you the next sentence from their statement. Here it is. WHO is therefore confident that detection of no new cases with active surveillance in place throughout this 42-day period means that an Ebola outbreak is indeed over. End quote. You got that? So they're saying that if they watch a population for 42 days and there's no new outbreak, then the outbreak is over. So logically, that means that there could be an outbreak within 42 days, right? If they're saying that we have to watch people for 42 days before we really know for sure that this outbreak is over, it means that they know that somebody could crash and be symptomatic on day 39 or 40 or 41 or even 42. That you got to watch a population for 42 days before you can be sure that the outbreak is over. Now, I don't know any other way to interpret these sentences that I have read for you. Unless somehow they have a massive typo, or I am interpreting this incorrectly, or I've suddenly lost the ability to do math, then I don't know any other way to interpret this. So my conclusion, based on what the WHO is writing here, is that the real incubation period for Ebola is up to 42 days for 98% of the patients. And about 1 in 20, or 5%, have an incubation period longer than 21 days. Now, the good news is that 19 out of 20 people, or 95%, have an incubation period within the 3 weeks. So the three-week advice is not useless. It would catch most people, but not all of them. And when you're dealing with Ebola, just being close doesn't really solve the problem. We need to catch every case. We need to clamp down on this top to bottom. We can't simply say, well, you know, 95% is good enough, and the other 5%, let them loose. Let them run through the malls and the shopping centers and the subway systems and the airports. Because all it takes is one person to infect, you know, another 10 or 50 or who knows how many. So 95%, I would argue, is not good enough. Now, this isn't the end of the jaw-dropping statements from this WHO document, which, again, is so blatantly truthful that I'm sure they're going to remove it. You know, it's like, wow, really? They're telling the truth? This is so shocking. I mean, they're to be commended for it, by the way. I think this is an incredible and an important document. It's to their credit that they have posted this. But, you know, we so rarely see accurate information about these things from official sources that, you know, we're just shocked to see that they're telling the truth here. Or at least, as best we can tell, they're telling the truth. I can't think of any reason why the WHO would lie and say it's 42 days when it isn't 42 days. I don't see that helps anyone. But check this next thing out. This is really astonishing. I'm going to read you from the report again, word for word. Quote, WHO is alarmed by media reports of suspected Ebola cases imported into new countries that are said by government officials or ministries of health to be discarded as negative within hours after the suspected case enters the country. Such rapid determination of infection status is impossible, casting grave doubts on some of the official information that is being communicated to the public and the media, end quote. Wow, did you hear that? The WHO just said what I've been saying. You're being lied to. I mean, they could hardly state it more clearly. Again, their quote, casting grave doubts on some of the official information that is being communicated to the public. What they're saying here is that it is impossible to clear someone of Ebola in a matter of hours. The testing takes 2 days, not hours. And I'll read you more from their report that talks about why this has to happen over at least 48 hours in order to clear someone of Ebola. It can't happen in hours. So all those news reports where you and I have been lied to, where they say, oh, someone was suspected of having Ebola, and out of an abundance of caution, we took him to the hospital, we ran a test, and boom, what do you hear? A couple hours later, they announce, it was a false alarm, doesn't have Ebola. It turns out that's all complete quackery. You can't say in a matter of hours whether they have Ebola. And as the WHO explains here in this document, quote, two negative RT-PCR test results, that's PCR is, of course, a genetic replication instrumentation or technology used in labs. So they're saying that two negative RT-PCR test results, at least 48 hours apart, are required for a clinically asymptomatic patient, that means someone who's not showing symptoms, to be discharged from hospital or for a suspected Ebola case to be discarded as testing negative for the virus, end quote. So to put this in layman's terms, what they're saying is you have to have two negative results in the PCR instrument that are tested at least 48 hours apart. 48 hours is at least 2 days, right? And since that's the minimum, the actual practical testing for this is most likely to take about 3 days. So if a patient is being described as being, or I should say a suspected patient is being declared as being free of Ebola in anything less than about 3 days, you're being lied to, according to the WHO. This isn't me saying this, because I readily admit I don't have PCR instrumentation. I do run a laboratory, but I run ICP-MS for analytical atomic spectrometry, you know, mass spec analysis equipment for testing heavy metals in foods, for example. I run that kind of lab. I don't have a PCR instrument. I don't run genetic tests in my lab. So I'm not saying this. I wouldn't know the correct answer on PCR test results for Ebola viruses. And I'm not freaking playing around with Ebola. I'm not, you know, yeah, I've got external standards of lead and cadmium and mercury and arsenic and even uranium and non-radioactive isotopes, things like that. I've got all that stuff in my lab. I am not going to be playing around with vials of Marburg or Ebola to see what the test results show. No, not interested. Thank you very much. Lead is dangerous enough as it is, and lead doesn't self-replicate. So this isn't me saying this. This is the WHO saying this, saying you are being lied to by the government authorities, by the ministries of health, by all these hospitals that say, well, we tested this patient. They're negative. They don't have any Ebola. Send them home. That is a lie. And that is probably why it keeps spreading. And at the same time, it's supposed to be a 42-day observation period, we're now learning, not the 21 days that we were told all along. So I ask you, how are we supposed to stop this outbreak when time and time again we're being given completely false or dishonest information about the transmission vectors, about the level of biosafety isolation equipment that we need to be wearing as medical staff? We're lied to about the training of the medical staff. We're lied to about the incubation period. We're lied to about the testing results. I mean, it's just over and over again we're being lied to about this. And this is not a theatrical run here. This is not a test case. This is not a drill. This is the real deal. The viability of the human race is legitimately threatened right now. Ebola is a level 4 biohazard. It is a hot agent. It has a 70% fatality rate right now. It is circulating and spreading in ways that all the world's virologists never could have predicted. No one saw this coming. Well, maybe a few did, and they warned about it, and nobody listened, but no one in the mainstream medicine industry saw this coming, I should say. This has the transmission vectors of this are far beyond what we were told. Remember, the CDC has always claimed it can only spread through direct contact, which is completely false. We've been told it's not airborne, even though it can spread through the air with aerosolized particles. It's just over and over and over again. We're being lied to about this. And this is not a joke. And this is not a drill. Our lives are at stake here. And yeah, I'm frustrated about it. I'm frustrated because I don't want to see people harmed and I don't want to see human suffering. It hurts my heart just to think about those who are suffering in West Africa right now, not to even consider what would happen if this became endemic in a place like North America, God forbid, or a place like Spain or a place like Brazil, and it began to infect millions. The human cry of pain and suffering would be impossible to endure if you had any kind of empathy or compassion at all. It's an unimaginable degree of suffering, and which is why we must be honest about the threat. We must be honest about the transmission vectors. We must be honest about the incubation period. And this is why I'm just so shocked and so frustrated that we're not being told the truth. And I apologize that this chapter is not giving you all kinds of practical information here, but this one bit of information, that it's a 42-day incubation period for potentially 1 out of 20 patients, that right there should change all of our thinking about this. It means that if we're going to be isolated in our own homes, if there's a, let's say, a regional quarantine or a shelter-in-place order, which we've discussed in detail in this course, that duration has to be doubled from 3 weeks to 6 weeks. So what does that mean in terms of practical preparedness? It means that all of your supplies need to be doubled as well. Oh, great, you're thinking, right? It's bad enough trying to get 21 days of food squared away and 21 days of water. Now you got to do 42 days. Because suppose this WHO factoid becomes widely acknowledged, and then suddenly the CDC adjusts its numbers. Everybody in the media is talking, well, now it's 42 days. And then if a quarantine comes down, it's going to be a 42-day isolation. Or maybe you have a sick family member who may have exposed some other family members, and now you're trying to ask yourself, well, how long should we observe these other family members who may have been exposed but are currently asymptomatic? The answer now, apparently, is really 42 days. Now, you could further refine that answer, and you could say that by day 21, if that person is still asymptomatic, then you have a 95% confidence level that they are not carrying Ebola, but 95% is not 100%, and you need to observe them for another 3 additional weeks in order to be certain, well, really, technically, according to the WHO, to reach a 98% confidence level. That is not even 100% at that point. And I don't know how long it takes for 100% to be achieved, but I will share this piece of information with you, which is also jaw-dropping, shocking, that is highly relevant to this discussion. And this was mentioned in one line in the book, The Hot Zone, which I've talked about several times here, the book by Richard Preston, the nonfiction documentary, New York Times bestseller from 1994. And in that book, and I don't know what page this is on, but I'm going to find it, it talks about during the Ebola Reston outbreak that there were scientists who were infected with Ebola and in whose bodies the virus replicated, but those scientists were permanently asymptomatic. They never showed any symptoms. In other words, they were probably part of that 2%. They were infected. The virus was cycling in their bodies. It was multiplying. It was replicating. But they never became symptomatic. They never crashed. They lived. They didn't even know they had Ebola until they were tested, and it turned out they were positive. And then the book talks about over time, their bodies were able to clear that virus naturally on their own. Their immune systems did the job. They were able to clear that virus, and then they were essentially Ebola free. Now, I have not seen this reported anywhere in the media either, that someone could become infected, could be incubating this for an indeterminate period of time, perhaps 90 days, perhaps 120 days. We don't even know how many days they could be incubating it for. And during this incubation period, they are completely asymptomatic. And yet, without question, their body fluids are still contagious. They could spread Ebola at that point through, for example, their semen. Ebola can be a sexually transmitted disease. They could spread Ebola through their blood, for example. What if they go donate blood at the Red Cross and they're asymptomatic, but the recipient of the blood donation is not asymptomatic, and suddenly they have Ebola, you know, 21 days later or sooner because they received an Ebola-infected blood transfusion. This can happen. It happened with AIDS, folks. A lot of people gave blood who had AIDS, and they gave AIDS to the blood donors. There's a historical precedent for this. This is not wild conjecture. This is actual history, medical history, but just with a different viral strain. So there are so many unanswered questions with this that it should make any rational person very, very concerned about the information that the health authorities are operating on. Remember when we saw all those people walking in and out of the Thomas Duncan apartment in Dallas and they weren't wearing any protective gear whatsoever? And to this day, it still hasn't been 21 days for some of those people. They may still become symptomatic, but even after the 21 days, they could carry this for 6 weeks before becoming symptomatic. So this is nowhere near over. The window of opportunity for Ebola to break out in some of those people is not over, not at all. But we've seen this careless attitude about health authorities being in proximity of areas that are contaminated, clearly contaminated by the Ebola virus. We've seen a level of carelessness. For example, those people power washing the sidewalk where Mr. Duncan vomited. And it's just sort of creating aerosolized Ebola vomit right out in the open air, which is a very insanely foolish idea for obvious reasons. This careless attitude is created by the lack of accurate information being communicated to the public by the health authorities. And it is this lack of communication, this lack of proper education, which has already gotten people killed and could very likely kill many, many more. And that's why it's unacceptable. That's why we need to know the real numbers. We need to know the real transmission vectors. We need to get serious about biosafety level 4 isolation gear. We need to get very serious about the proper training of medical staff. You know, how did that nurse in Dallas, Nina, how did she become infected when she was following the protocol and she had the gear? How did she become infected? These are uncomfortable questions, but these are questions that have to be asked. And you can't just blame Nina, as the CDC did. Oh, they said it's her fault. Well, I very much doubt that she intentionally gave herself Ebola. I'm pretty sure she was following everything she was told. Obviously, she's not a stupid person. She went through medical training. She's working at the hospital. She knew she was dealing with an Ebola patient. She probably tried as hard as she could to protect herself because she doesn't have a death wish. So you can't blame her. You have to blame the lack of good information, the lack of good equipment, the lack of honesty with frontline medical staff, and the lack of honesty with the public that is currently being demonstrated by the CDC. Flat out, the CDC isn't being honest with us and hasn't been since day one of this outbreak. Now, I'm not saying that all CDC people are bad. In fact, I've been meaning to give a shout out and thank the frontline CDC workers who are trying to save lives, who are working their butts off, who are putting in incredible hours, and who are taking some personal risks themselves. They deserve a lot of credit. They are true heroes for trying to get this problem under control. But it's the CDC leadership that is not being honest with us. And the leadership, Thomas Frieden, is really a politician, it seems. He behaves and speaks like a politician, not a scientist. Not someone who is really deeply trying to communicate accurate information, but instead someone who's really trying to cover his own ass and trying to cover the CDC's ass instead of telling people the truth. That's what it looks like from my perspective. It's pretty clear that that's the case. So I think if the CDC were, in fact, more interested and motivated in telling the truth and giving accurate information out to the public, we would be able to keep this under control more effectively and save lives. And if somebody's ass doesn't get covered along the way, who cares? We have to save lives is more important than saving face as the head of the CDC. You know, the CDC seems to be more interested in not getting blamed for anything than actually educating people about the accurate information in all of this. And for me personally, I would say I don't care about who gets blamed or not gets blamed. I just want to stop Ebola. I want to save lives. I want to protect my fellow brothers and sisters. All human beings on this planet are my brothers and sisters, and none of them deserve to suffer and die through the kind of hell that Ebola puts your body through. It's an unimaginable hell, a biological hell, you could call it, and no one deserves that, which means that they deserve better answers from us. They deserve honesty from all of us and all the health authorities. And we are so far past excuses and CYA type of behavior. We need to get honest with this. We need to be realistic about the transmission vectors, the isolation equipment, the incubation period, all of these things. We need to, and I've argued this before, that we need to be open and transparent about possible natural remedies and treatments and preventions and cures. We need to test colloidal silver. We need to test the antiviral herbs. We need to test the Chinese medicine, the TCM remedies that have worked for other plagues. We need to test black elderberry extract against Ebola. Why aren't these things being tested? You know, is the vaccine industry so greedy, so greed-driven, and the CDC so tied to the corruption that they can only look at a vaccine as the only possible treatment for this? Where's the CDC and the FDA with the possibility of, you know, there's millions of plant species in the world, and every one of those plants synthesizes their own natural chemicals. Many of those chemicals are medicinal. The science journals are filled with studies of animals self-medicating with medicinal plants. This is well documented across the entire study of anthropology and primatology and just monkeys, apes, and humans. I mean, plants create medicine. Why aren't we testing these medicines against Ebola? Are we so insane now that Western medical system, the pharmaceutical companies, have such a grip, such a monopoly, a scientific dictatorship over the world, that we can't even look at the possibility that plants might save lives or might prevent transmission or might boost immune function, or that even something as natural as colloidal silver or nanosilver might be able to help in this process? It doesn't mean we have to discard vaccines. Maybe there is a vaccine that helps. Maybe it works twice as good when you combine it with colloidal silver. Shouldn't we know this answer? Why isn't this being tested? There's no excuse for it. There's absolutely no excuse. That's why every person that dies from this day forward in North America from Ebola, I put the blame squarely on the government health officials, the CDC leadership, the FDA, those who refuse to tell the truth and refuse to test natural remedies for their potential, who refuse to look at the actual possibility of other solutions that might be available right this very minute, and who refuse to give people the information, the accurate information that they need to prevent infections and prevent the spread of this. It is unconscionable that we are living in a society that is so controlled by corporate monopolistic medical interests that we can't even have a discussion about natural remedies and their potential role in halting the spread of a deadly epidemic with a 70% fatality rate that has now broken out in the continental United States. the first time in history. The fact that even now, under these circumstances, the monopoly of modern medicine is so complete and so controlling that it can't even entertain the idea of an alternative, beneficial nutritional therapy or herbal therapy is just absolutely unconscionable. We deserve every available possible potential solution. We deserve better than a medical monopoly. And if this virus does sweep through the population, by the way, those who are most likely to survive are going to be those who boost their immune function with things like vitamin D, with things like antiviral herbs, with vitamin C, just people who have stronger immune function, who have stronger constitutions because they've made these decisions to stop destroying their immune function with nutrition-zapping medications, for example, and start boosting their immune function. I have no doubt that those are the people who are more likely to survive than anyone else. And the fact that this message isn't being shared with the public is nothing short of medical negligence. It's just pure medical negligence. Every person in the world right now should be told the truth about boosting immune function and stopping all the unhealthy habits that suppress immune function. Because if we want to stop this, we've got to end the monopoly, the oppression of natural remedies, the censorship of the truth about all of these available alternative therapies. We've got to pull out all the stops. We've got to work together as a global community to invoke the potential and test the potential of every system of medicine around the world. There's Western medicine, there's Eastern medicine, there's Tibetan medicine, Amazon rainforest medicine, Australia, Aborigine medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, Western herbalism, so many systems of medicine, homeopathy, chiropractic care. I mean, could any of these be helpful? Of course they could. Why aren't we finding out what works and then crossing off the list the things that don't work? Why aren't we applying science to the question of how can we stop Ebola using every available potential medicinal tool known to human civilization? I mean, who knows? Maybe little infrared lights that you rub on your skin actually kill Ebola in your blood for some reason that we don't know yet. I'm not saying that does, but I'm saying, what if it did? Maybe you could reduce your viral load with a little handheld LED device. Is that possible? Yeah, it's possible. Why don't we test it? If it doesn't work, we can cross it off the list and we can say, this doesn't work. But no one's testing it. The only money that is being made available by the U.S. government going to the NIH is for vaccines and drugs, and that's it. There is no money for testing anything else against Ebola, and in fact, all such attempts at testing are censored, oppressed, and scientists are blacklisted. Some of them are even criminalized or run out of the country. That's how bad the medical monopoly is in America today. And if it stays that way through an Ebola outbreak, it may get millions of people killed. Millions of people may die because the system wants to protect the monopoly of Western medicine and won't even consider the possibility that something outside of the patentability, the intellectual property of the drug corporations, that something else that they can't control might actually be useful to the human race. That idea can never be allowed to be explored because it might cost them profits. Now, finally, I'm going to wrap this up, but let me explain the context of my frustration here. I do realize I've been somewhat animated in this audio chapter, perhaps more so than any other chapter. Yes, I'm frustrated because I value human life, because I don't want people to suffer, I don't want people to die, and I truly believe to the full depth of my heart and soul that there must be an answer to Ebola out there. And it's probably an answer in the rainforest. It's probably one of these rainforest herbs, because one of the principles of natural medicine, if you're into medicine at all, if you're into nutrition at all, one of the basic principles is that nature tends to provide solutions in the same geographic regions from which problems arise. For example, in the desert, you've got obviously a lot of dryness and you need a lot of hydration. many of the desert plants then grow special, incredible molecules, such as you find in the gel of aloe vera, that are incredibly good at maintaining hydration and can be used topically and internally. I've even done videos of how to make aloe vera leaf gel smoothies, and additional research finds that the aloe vera gel enhances the oxygen-carrying capacity of red blood cells in human blood. So, in many examples, Mother Nature provides answers at the same time that it might provide a threat or a problem. And because Ebola is coming out of rainforest areas, or jungles, let's say, that are in many ways stressed by human activity, by the destruction of the natural biosphere, it is also extremely likely, in my view, and I think in the view of many, many natural medicine practitioners and researchers, and even the medicine hunter might have an interesting opinion on this, Chris Killam, that the remedies for Ebola might also be found, or would very likely be found, in that same region. How many plant species are there in the jungles? I don't know. Millions, probably. Millions of different plant species. How many different phytochemicals are created or synthesized by those plants in the jungle? Probably also millions. Millions of different molecules, most of which have never been documented or researched, and virtually none of which have ever been tested against Ebola. Why is that? How can we live on a planet where there's medicine around every corner of a forest or a jungle or even in the ocean? There's medicine everywhere. There's molecules synthesized by plants and even consumed, selectively consumed by animals, by primates. Monkeys and apes go around and they pick and they eat specific plants to treat specific types of infections. This is documented. How can we live on a planet like this with medicine all around us, and yet our medical authorities who run the Western medical system tell us that there is no medicine other than what comes out of their synthesized laboratories and their patent offices, that that's the only medicine in the world, no other medicine exists whatsoever? It is absurd. And it is an absurdity. It is a gross distortion of reality that could get millions of us killed in an Ebola outbreak. And I can't understand, as a human being who has empathy, who has compassion, and who values life, I can't understand why we aren't tapping into the medicine that is already right there in front of us, that requires no royalties, no patents. It exists in the rainforest right now all around us. And I've hiked through rainforests, and I've tapped trees to get the sangre de drago, the latex, which is very high in anthocyanins, just one of the millions of phytochemicals produced by plants. You know, I've harvested uña de gato, cat's claw herb, which has amazing antiviral properties. I've harvested that, wildcrafted that in Ecuador. You know, I've harvested many of these herbs myself, chanca piedra. You know, and there's a company out there called the Amazon Herb Company that specializes in rainforest herbs that come out of the rainforest. And every one of these should be tested for potential to halt Ebola. And the fact that they are not being tested, that they're not being scientifically tested against Ebola, is borderline criminal, in my opinion. It is negligent. It is unconscionable, and it is inexcusable. We must do everything possible to test every natural molecule created by Mother Nature to solve this problem, which some people say has been caused by Mother Nature, but you and I both know that Ebola has actually only emerged out of the rainforest because of the damage caused to the biosphere by human activity, the destruction of the ecosystem, the toxic contamination of the ecosystem. That's why it's happening. And if humanity has been so incredibly short-sighted that it would destroy the biosphere and actually create the conditions that lead to the emergence of these diseases, you got to ask yourself the final question here. Can humanity wake up in time to save itself from its own destruction? And I am not convinced that answer is yes. I hope it is, but I'm not convinced that it is. We haven't woken up yet. Until we start testing all those plants and all and colloidal silver and antiviral herbs and Chinese medicines, until we do that, we are always going to be at risk from a global viral outbreak and a wipeout of human civilization as we know it today. Please share this message. Share it. Put it on the torrent sites. Get it out there. Download the MP3. Share the URL of this website, biodefense.com. Tell people. They need to know the truth about what's happening. My name is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. I'm the creator of this website, biodefense.com, and the editor of naturalnews.com. And I desperately want to help awaken humanity so that we can save ourselves from our own destruction that we have set in motion across our planet. Wow. All right, more episodes are coming in this course. I'll try to be less emotional on future episodes. I plan to wrap this up by 20 episodes at maximum. And watch this website for more chapters, all the way up to number 20. And that's it for this website. After this, I'm recording for a new website called PrepperMistakes.com. We're going to cover mistakes and solutions for preparedness and self-reliance. And also, don't forget, I'm releasing a breakthrough technology in early 2015. And this technology is a self-reliance technology. It's non-electric, has no circuit boards, does not use electricity or fossil fuels. It is completely EMP-proof, and it addresses big challenges in four key areas, which is food, water, nutrition, and medicine. And this invention, this is not about selling it. In fact, I'm going to go public with plans on how to make your own. I'll be teaching a DIY version of how to build your own replica of this technology using common parts and tools available at Home Depot or any hardware store for that matter. And but we'll also have the systems that I've designed for sale as well for those who want to buy a ready-made system. I only hope that I can get this technology out in time before things get so much worse that it might even be difficult logistically to get the raw materials or ship out the systems or even conduct commercial transactions online. I mean, who knows? But this is my focus right now, folks. I'm really working hard to get this invention documented and out the door as quickly as possible in the interest of helping as many people as possible become self-reliant so they can survive what's coming, because we sure can't depend on the authorities to tell us the truth or save us or even to try to find out what works. They're not even interested in what works to stop the epidemic. They're just interested in making money, selling vaccines, and that's it. And it's an obscenity toward human civilization that's the case. All right, folks, take care. I'll talk to you on the next episode. Stay safe in the meantime.